So, Your Royal Highness, we had a very interesting meeting at the Legatum Institute this morning, and it was convened at your inspiration. And I'd like to know what inspired you to call it, to organize it.
Every region in the world has an institutional ability to address poverty and enablement of the poor, the creation of citizenship, except for our region. Our regional institution, the Arab League, one of the oldest in the world for any region, particularly in the post-colonial era, is on its knees. Politically, of course, it is running from putting out one fire to the other. We hope that it will be successful in bringing the parties together over the question of Iran, and the Iran nuclear capability, over the question of Sunni-Shia confrontation, which, of course, is raising its ugly head at the moment. Which has really nothing to do with either Sunni or Shia. It has more to do with Sunni oil versus Shia oil. And the returns on this oil, which makes us the richest and yet the poorest region in the world, are basically going into funding the industrialized world. And the fact is that we represent less than 3% of the world GDP. So continuing to look at this region in terms of handouts, even SMEs, with all due respect, are limited because there is no full understanding of the need for a knowledge base. We are not developing production and productivity as we could be. And I thought putting the young who have demanded jobs, to work is absolutely essential. Along comes Deauville, and Deauville promises $35 billion.
And can you explain?
Deauville was the post-Arab Spring initiative hosted by the G8. And the three ministers of the Arab Spring come to a meeting of the G8 shepherds in Jordan, Egyptian, Tunisian, and Moroccan. We host them, and they ask me to speak to the issue, and I said, well, I didn't make the terms of reference of Deauville, but I mean, what are you talking about? They said, well, Deauville wants us to talk about, this initiative wants us to talk about trade. We have nothing to trade with. Oil and gas are not within our purview. So we have now been subdivided by the World Bank into oil-producing countries. Jordan is not one of them, nor is Egypt, nor is Tunisia. Nor is Morocco, Arab Spring countries, oil-producing countries in transition where new finds are being made, and people like ourselves are oil-importing countries. We do not matter. Human dignity is not given its recognition. So if we've seen a thematic approach that is worth emulating, it's the coal and steel community. So my question is, the need for an institution that begins to think of putting priorities back in order, a concept into which projects fit, rather than projects making the rich richer. How can we make a break from rentier economics, from triumphalist investment in white elephants, and start investing in our human capital before it is too late?
And why do you think a regional development bank, one of the things discussed this morning, is the solution? What could that do that's different?
Well, I'm not wedded of the word bank as opposed to fund or foundation. But as someone said, everyone knows what a bank is and nobody knows what a fund is. And to be relevant, there is no authentic regional bank for reconstruction and development. If the IBRD, the World Bank, as we call it today, started for reconstruction and development in post-war Europe, my question is, why can't we emulate at least the Visegrad countries, Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, and Czechia, in trying to rebuild our region? They were countries in transition after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and they recognized what was required in terms of the legal empowerment of the poor and the creation of citizenship. So I think that this non-discriminatory approach for a bank for reconstruction and development is important, and what makes it more important is that it should be culturally grounded in concepts such as zakat, ALMS. We have enough of ARMS in the trillions. But ALMS also could rise to the trillions if we had a universal organization which is transparent and accountable. You could call it concessionary financing if you will. But at least it begins to address the following challenge. We have 20 million uprooted in our region. And as I've been quoting Peter Sutherland, on the one side you have Mars, the mobility stakeholders, the refugees in all their categories and all their different mandates, legal mandates, or some with no legal mandate. And on the other side you have Venus, which is the development stakeholders. And unless we recognize that these are the same consumers of water, for example, how can we hope to develop a regional structure of energy and water for the human environment? We are the most parched region in the world, and at the same time we don't recognize the fact that energy and water are potential synonyms. We can be desalinating as one of the priorities that are needed tomorrow to make people feel that they have a stake in their future. I would like to see a public participation in this discussion of ad personam, sitting here as we are, leaving our titles out of the room, which is the to the credit of Legatum that we've come together on this basis, political figures, economic and social figures, civil society figures, and maybe a leaders' forum, beginning to simulate the existence of the structure, whether we call it a bank or a fund, at the end of the day remains to be seen. But there has been funding forthcoming for studies, and I think that this will gain momentum in the beginning of the year.
One of the catalysts for the creation of what eventually became the European Union after the war in Europe in 1945 was the creation of the coal and steel community,
yeah,
as you've mentioned. Do you think that the conversation about water in the region, because it's a genuine cross-regional issue, it crosses borders as it crosses from rich to poor, do you think that could be the catalyst for a deeper, more profound regional organization in the Middle East?
Well, I'm involved with the Blue Peace concept, which started in Montreux, Switzerland, and then moved to Turkey, and now has moved to our West Asia region. And on in a few weeks' time, we're inviting the Okavango Commission, the Mekong Commission, the Finnish-Russian Water Commissions, all are coming to be observed and monitored by participants from all over the Arab world. So we are beginning to develop a regional forum, not only the Arab world, but also other countries, the non-Arab countries in the region. So I'm glad to say that that is a regional common. We hope to make it a creative common, and I think it is an excellent example to follow.
And what are the next steps?
The next steps practically are the funding has been committed to the studies and the priorities required of this body. The swell of public opinion in our region is basically pessimistic. So how to contain pessimism, particularly among the young, before the Arab Spring erupts again? And I think this time it might be called the Arab Tsunami, because we have nationalist passions, we have quasi-religious passions, we have wars that are reaping tens of thousands of people, innocent people, every day in Iraq and Syria, but not alone. And I think that this potential for anarchy in our region is combined with the drug industry, the money laundering industry. So it is a race now. The next step should be to establish the contact group of everyone, of the stakeholders, and to begin a strategy of media promotion, which is absolutely essential, to say, well, there's another show in town, and that show is integration, inclusion. And I'm happy to say that the Arab Social Charter has achieved part of that. The young themselves are saying, proscribe all forms of discrimination. Focus on a free and Arab, and I say responsible Arab citizenship. So we're no longer labels. And when a young Moroccan or Tunisian walks up to me and he says, I really don't know much about you, but I know you're clean, I take that as a compliment. But it's rather sad that it should be put in such a context.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.